to Juno Afternoon, which is made possible with support from Hanson Grest, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. And we're here during Foodie Friday. It's First Friday, but also Foodie Friday. And Lionel Udipa has joined us from Salt, the great award-winning chef from Salt. Lionel, thanks so much for coming in, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And you're a person that I think, you know, people look on as someone who's kind of an inspiring chef here in Juneau. You've definitely, with good purpose, built that reputation up for the last number of years here working with Salt. And one thing I wanted to know about when you approach that, what are some of the things you're trying to bring to dishes that you do? When you say, okay, I've got this great ingredient, I've got a beautiful steak, I've got a beautiful thing that I'm going to cook. What are some of the elements that you start thinking about that you want to try to bring to each dish that you do?
Well, that's a great question. We try to keep it as simple and less complicated as possible. What we're trying to really do is kind of highlight the ingredient in which we're working with. So if we have a really good piece of steak or a really good piece of fish, we want to make sure that we're respecting that ingredient and trying to cook it in the most purest form possible. And as far as like side dishes to accompany that protein, we try to throw a forage ingredient in there depending on what the season is.
Some people describe themselves as a French chef, or some people describe. Is there a discipline that you studied and feel like that you fall under or were most influenced by?
I was classically trained under a bunch of French chefs.
Okay.
But with that being said, you know, French food is still very popular these days. Like, we still use the French brigade and the French technique, but just using different ingredients. So as far as like putting a title to what kind of chef I am, I'd say I'm pretty well-rounded for the most part.
Sure, yeah. Do you think that being an Alaskan changes your perspective on what it means to be a chef?
Oh, yes, it's amazing. There's so much to pick off the land here and to hunt and to fish. And, you know, when I moved back to Juneau, I kind of just wanted to get back into that. So I got into fishing, I got into hunting and foraging, and you know, I kind of really just built a true respect with food and, you know, what it can bring to the table and how it hits different memories when you cook certain things.
Yeah. And what's your heritage? What's your sort of family heritage?
I'm full Filipino.
Okay. So is that a piece of the puzzle that you try to bring to things as well? I can imagine that if you grew up eating a lot of great Philippine food, that maybe that comes into play.
Yeah, every now and then. We ate a lot of vegetables growing up and a lot of fermented items as well. So my mother would cook stews of oxtail or bitter melon or eggplant, you know, good ingredients like that. So we kind of we'll do, you know, specials every now and then and have dishes like that. But as far as, like, just picking one salad cuisine, we're kind of
– Yeah, you're kind of all over, yeah.
Yeah.
And then tell me about, you know, a lot of the times we bring folks in on this segment who are, you know, great chefs, but they kind of work on their own or they're great chefs. Tell me about managing a kitchen. What are some of the challenges to managing a kitchen? Because you're really in there. And when you're slammed on a Friday, a Saturday night, right? It's got to really be something.
Yeah,
right?
it's really, really difficult.
So, what are some of the things that you think about when you're managing that kitchen?
I found out that, you know, the easiest part about being a chef is cooking, hands down. It's the easiest and it's the funnest. And that's kind of why I got into this industry.
I'm sure that's true. Most people think about that. The romance of it all is in that creativity and that cooking and presenting a plate and
right.
the enjoyment that people have. And that's awesome.
Right.
Seems like, wow, I want to do that.
Yeah.
But then
there's, you know, the execution of food, trying to have staff just kind of envision what you're thinking and what you're trying to bring to the table and then executing it 15, 20 times, you know, during the day. That's just very hard and under high heat and a lot of pressure, it gets pretty tough.
Yeah.
You got to be in the right state of mind is one. I've always told my cooks that, you know, working in the kitchen, you kind of have to be an amateur athlete. So you got to eat well, exercise if you can.
Now, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that part of it. The actual physicality of it is really an element.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, you could really just not have the stamina in a way to get through the night.
Right.
Especially if you're not treating yourself right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. That's a fascinating part of it.
I mean, you know, like after a busy night, too, there's really no time to eat sometimes. So whatever we have that's in front of us, we're usually scarfing down. French fries, ice cream, anything you can.
Right. And I mean, you know, there's, you know, the great food, history is sort of there's famous tales of great chefs and great staff that fall into really bad habits because they're in that scenario, right? You're just slammed. End of the night, it's 2 a.m, right? It's not like a normal life in a lot of ways, you know. How do you deal with that part of it, that sort of non-normality?
Just kind of having boundaries, you know, setting strict boundaries for yourself. Having a busy night and working and doing the same thing every night, you know, that repetition can be kind of very robotic. So your mind kind of starts to wander off and it's like, all right, what else can I be doing to have some sort of excitement? For me, it's like I'm going to get up early and kind of going to go catch the sun or do something totally different. That way it's just, you know, I feel like my life is a little bit more rewarding.
Well-rounded and yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about recipe development. How do you work best? Do you prefer to kind of sit and do it by is it a solo pursuit or do you do it with the collaboration of others? What are some of the ways that you develop recipes?
Usually the train of thought for me is I'll come up with a dish and talk about it with my staff. And then we taste it, we execute it, we see how long it takes. And then we just taste the dish over and over before we put it on the menu. But it's definitely a process.
This is maybe a weird question, but is there an ingredient that right now you're really excited about? Is there a new ingredient? Is there something that you can't get enough of right this moment? Or does that kind of thing happen?
It does, absolutely. Yeah. I've been eating a lot of vegetables lately.
That's good.
It's great.
Yeah.
And then we have a couple things working in our fermentation chamber. So kind of like putting the two
fermentation
together.
Chamber.
And
I like that. That sounds awesome.
So yeah, we're kind of just we mess around a lot with that. So
yeah, I got to kind of go behind the scenes a couple times in your kitchen because we've done some beer dinners and things like that together. And I think I did get to go see where you were doing some fermenting and also like drying meats and doing that sort of thing.
Oh, you should see it now.
So yeah, tell me about it. What's it look like? And what are some of your goals there?
So we definitely don't like to waste a lot of things. So we've been fermenting stuff like black garlic. That's been in our heat chamber for about 3 weeks now. We have our fish sauce, of course, a fish sauce that's made with.
Well, let me back you up, but we'll talk about the fish sauce in a minute because that is. But you just said heat chamber.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, tell me about what are these different? What's a heat chamber versus a cold storage versus a
So it's just a chamber, a door, has a glass door that's steel all around, and you can just control the heat.
Okay.
So right now it's hanging out at about 134 degrees.
And that in the black garlic, is that in oil?
It's actually just vacuum sealed.
Okay. But just exposed to that heat.
Correct.
Kind of lets it ferment, lets the bacterial kind of fermentation process happen?
Correct.
Yeah, right.
Wow. And then we'll sometimes put a blanket over it because it works a lot better without any sunlight or any kind of light.
Yeah.
We have tomatoes in there, some fish sauce that we're making with squid. We got some mushrooms that we're fermenting.
Yeah, tell me about this fish sauce. What goes into a good fish sauce? I mean, without revealing secrets, because I imagine you have some.
So it's a solution of salt and sugar and water. And then it's just time. Like ours has been going for about 2 years now.
Really? But it also contains fish or fish juice?
Yes,
or?
Fish bones.
Okay.
Like in this one, we have cod that we've rinsed out really well, and some cod head, and then water, and then its weight, the fish bones weight, and 5% of salt.
Okay.
So for a while, like for the first 6 months was just pretty nasty because it smelled so bad. And
right.
Every month you would have to put a large spoon in there and move it around. But we made sure we did that after everyone left.
Put the fans on.
Yeah.
But then after about 6 months, it kind of gets to kind of more a little bit of an equilibrium or it's...
It starts to crystallize.
Okay.
And then all the nasty bacteria that you're not supposed to have floats to the top, and then we skim it. And then we get one of those like tank cleaners
mm-hmm.
with the filter,
yeah.
And we just let it run for about a week.
Oh, so you're literally like an aquarium tank filter?
Yeah.
Wow, that's wild.
And then
is it going through charcoal or is it going just through the kind of filter like
– Just a filter.
Just the filter, not charcoal filtered.
And then we bring it to a boil. And then it kills all the bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
And then that's it. Then it's inert.
Right.
And then it's just jarred and just put in a fridge.
Correct.
Oh, okay. Wow. But it's a 2-year process to kind of get it
You can do like 6 months. You can do a year.
Yeah.
But we have one that we have it like a year, and then we're going to see how long it can go.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. And what sort of things do you use the fish sauce in? I mean, I always think about Asian cuisine when I think of fish sauce, but do you use it in kind of things that might surprise people?
Yeah, so we won this seafood contest a few years mm-hmm. ago, and it was one of the main ingredients along with king crab in our risotto. So it added salt element.
Wow. But a really complex added salt element.
Correct.
Yeah, right. Wow, that's fascinating. That was in your risotto.
Yeah.
Well, that is surprising.
Well, we'll use it for some of our sauces too.
Sure.
Some specials and whatnot.
Yeah.
But it's a cool little bragging right that we've been working on.
Well, this time of year is not necessarily I guess in some ways it is abundant. There's deer hunting. There's different stuff going on. What ingredients do you look for in winter that you get really excited about serving up?
Yeah, so we did this awesome New Year's Eve tasting, and we found this purveyor up in Anchorage, and we got some yak from her, which was
yak,
yes,
wow,
which is really interesting.
Have you ever worked
with
that before?
I have.
Yeah. So what
Super
would it compare
lean.
To? Like a moose meat almost, or something like that?
A lot leaner than that.
Wow.
The there's no marbling in the meat whatsoever, and all the fat grows underneath its fur. So outside of its skin, which is really interesting.
Right.
But it was really lean. We cooked the ribs, which were really, really nice. A little bit on the gamey side. But
when you're cooking meat that's that lean, it must be much different to cook than your typical meat. You're not depending on
right.
the fat to help cook the meat.
Oh, it's super – it gets really tough, too, if you overcook it a little bit.
Is that right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So is it so cooking the ribs on that, is that a slow cook kind of thing? And
yeah, it was about 250 degrees for about 6 hours.
Okay, yeah.
It was amazing.
Right, that's cool. And what sort of braising or what sort of sauce or technique did you use?
So we make a veal stock, and we cook off some aromatics is what we call it, which is mirepoix. It's carrots, celery, and onions. And that kind of just flavors the broth. And then we put everything in a large hotel pan after the yak is seared and then just throw it in the oven. And then you can, once the yak is cooked, you can take the braising liquid that it's in and reduce it and use that as its sauce.
Well, there you go. Yak cooking tips from Lionel Udip, the chef at Salt, something I did not know we were going to hit on today. Really fascinating. Thanks for talking to us, man, on Foodie Friday.
Thanks
really
for having me.
Great to talk to you. Lionel is the head chef at Salt, doing beautiful work there every single day. So go check out Salt and Chef Udipa's fantastic cooking happening there. Lionel, thanks again for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having
us here for Foodie Friday.